It's that time of the year. Your vacation is coming up. You can already hear the beach waves, feel the warm breeze, relax, and think about work. You really, really want it all to work out while you're away. Monday.com gives you and the team that peace of mind. When all work is on one platform and everyone's in sync, things just flow. Wherever you are, tap the banner to go to Monday.com.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the What Culture Gaming Podcast. I'm your host, Scott Telford, joined by Rich Hudson.
Hello.
And Ewan Parson.
Hello.
And my voice is slowly returning to the desk, but not fully.
Like 50% Scott.
I was going to go with like a 70.
On the 70. Scale between gruff, generic, military, first-person shooter protagonist and Scott.
Yes.
Probably about a third of the way through.
Yeah, I was Adam Jensening on Sunday, but yeah. I'm slowly getting
we'll
back to...
We'll gauge it by having a controversial opinion and see how many noises come out.
Yeah, it depends how well I can pull off a, well,
I mean, on the first day you were literally, I'm the guy from Chernobyl.
X-rays, it's like an X-ray.
It was a good time.
Like 1,000 X-rays.
So, this is something that came from Rich. I forget when you initially mentioned it, but we were talking about different gimmicks in the industry and marketing. Mm-hmm. All the sort of the marketing hokum that we put up with in the gaming industry.
Yep.
And how, if you look back on the last sort of 20-30 years kind of thing, a whole bunch of different consoles have been sold on specific gimmicks to get you in that maybe in reality weren't especially as amazingly wondrous as we were led to believe. So I kind of want to have a wider conversation about the appeal of consoles and how where the industry's at with them and things like that. So do you guys think that, as an opening question, do you think the appeal of getting a new console has maybe changed over time based on what they can offer the industry? Like, you think about how excited we used to get when we were younger. Like, oh my God, this thing now does 3D, it does HD, it goes online, it does these different things.
I feel like the idea that we're now heading to a point where the next console is going to be the consoles and that's it.
Right, right.
This has come at about the right time, because I don't think there's much they could sell in terms of gimmicks with the next lot of systems, which we will get to, because there is one thing that is prevalent for both the Xbox and the PlayStation,
yes.
So we'll get to that. But yeah, I think this is about the right time that we're starting to think, okay, we're kind of sick about getting a new one every, I don't know, every 7 or 8 years, but like people are like, oh, here we go, I've just got my PS4, I really like my PS4.
Especially with a half-step system like a PS4 Pro.
Yeah,
as well.
I was going to say, yeah, I totally agree. I remember the transition from back in our old naive days when I was 9 years old in 2005.
Oh, good Lord,
yeah,
Ewan.
I was. And,
I was 10.
Oh, there we go. And the transition, I remember from the Xbox to the Xbox 360, that it was so exciting to me. I was like, oh my God, look at the graphics they're doing. And it looks so amazing. I remember being blown away by the admittedly now janky looking Marvel Ultimate Alliance. And I saw the different textures they can get, and I was like, oh my God, it's so shiny.
Yeah.
And again, I had that same kind of feeling going into the PlayStation 4 and stuff, going on from the Xbox 360 and PlayStation 3. Mm-hmm. But I'm kind of content now. I think the thing is, with those previous two advancements, it was very much a graphical thing for me, and also the power and different features that you could have. But I'm content. I've kind of plateaued. I don't really see what all I want is more games. I'm quite happy where things are visually, if I'm being completely honest.
I sometimes make like a film comparison, because it's like over time, if you go back and look at Hollywood history, obviously, you know, at one point color came in, you had different sound and then HD and whatever. And I think that at some point the technology just gets there. It's completely capable. You can give it to a bunch of different production crews and they can make their movies. And so I think that once those things are in place, a lot of Hollywood these days has fallen back on a lot of gimmicks, a lot of like 4D and D-Box and things like that. Things that are just meant to get you in that you know aren't really that intrinsic to the experience. They are very much bolted on.
Yeah.
So that idea of like, where else do consoles even go? Like, what do you guys think we'll get in the future? It will just be, that'll be it.
As you said, it's just a plateau. Mm-hmm. We've reached that point. It's like, playing through God of War on my very, very, very bog standard PS4. That game is beautiful.
Yeah.
And it's like, I could see this like running better on a PS4 Pro, but it's like, I'm fine with what I've got.
Said,
if games continue to look like this, I'm okay.
Yeah. Do you think we're missing anything? Because I remember when we leapt to PS4 and Xbox One, it was like, oh, now we've got social media features. And I was like, okay, sure. But I wasn't like missing them. I wasn't like asking for them or anything. You could take the 360.
I think it's the case of like you just looking for the, it's the little details, like backwards compatibility. I think the ability to have your entire library on one machine is a big thing.
That's the gimmick they can sell with the next gen. It's a legacy. And I think that's what proves it to be a plateau, because you can't really, if you're going to go for a full legacy, you can't really go, here's a legacy system, and then the next one is going to be a legacy system. A legacy is there when it's there. It's solidified. And then from here out, it's just the same old stuff.
Yeah, it's more about practicality and functionality to me at this point. It makes practical and functional sense to have everything I own playable on one console, and it also makes sense for it to not fucking run out of memory. I did a bad word. Oh God, I'm panicking. But like running out of memory at like certain point is like the worst thing ever. Like it's I can't tell you how frustrating it gets trying to play cycling through different things in your library, and then your PlayStation 4 is like, looks like you don't have enough memory there, partner. And I'm just there like, oh,
is that
gee.
How your PS4 sounds?
Yeah, it is. It's a really patronizing
too
old.
Much Red Dead on
To be fair, though, I mean, that was one thing that they led with this generation. The whole, the sort of, I mean, obviously Xbox put their foot in it and sort of tried to go down the whole digital license route and everything else. Didn't really work. But that whole idea of everything being digitally downloadable, the hard drive sizes that we started with were nowhere near capable of storing an entire library. But do you guys think that you, because for me, I was going to talk about getting stuck in the hype where it's like, there's a new console coming around and it gets hyped up and it's got all these new features. And it's just that idea of what a new console means to the industry. I think that that's kind of got slightly less. But did you, over time, when you guys were younger, did you always buy the systems the second they came out, or were you a more conscious?
I was very, very slow going through with consoles when I was a kid.
I was getting them at midnight as soon as possible.
I know you were.
I mean, maybe that's a generational thing, because the whole thing when I was growing up, I had a Dreamcast when I was 4, and that was my life. That was amazing. That opened up a whole new world of possibilities. I didn't even know games existed before the Dreamcast when I got that. And then I got the Xbox. That was incredible as well. I was like, oh my God, I can definitely see the uptick in functionality. Mm-hmm. And my dad was kind of the one that really led the way. He was like, no, the Dreamcast is the most advanced thing on the market that you can get as a console. You'll enjoy that. The Xbox, again, more powerful than the PlayStation 2. You'll enjoy that. Mm-hmm. And when it came to the 360, there were certain, you know, different aspects of it where the main thing it was sold to me was, this is the better thing that's available at the time. Yeah. And I was always patient. I never felt the need to upgrade immediately after. And not that I would have a say in it anyway, because who has 400 quid lying around when they're 8 or 9?
Exactly.
That's completely bonkers. But it was always a case of I'd wait, and I've always adopted that approach ever since. I've waited 1 year to invest in the next generation. I know. And I think maybe that kind of falls back into that old discussion we had about the game industry kind of punishing its most loyal customers, because I even waiting a year to get my PlayStation 4, I still feel a little bit kind of chagrined to have to see all these new different versions of the PlayStation, and mine's here rattling and going, it's like the chitty chitty, like the chitty chitty bang bang of like older PlayStation,
running out of memory.
It's just running, it's dying, it's coughing, it's spluttering, it's like like that each time I boot it up. It's basically like the penguin from Toy Story 2.
Wheezy.
It's just like going,
which is just me right now.
Yeah, exactly. And I think maybe I'll jump onto the next console cycle very, very quickly. Mm. Mainly out of necessity, I think, because, you know, what we do as professionals. Mm-hmm. But also it's a case of like, if I could wait, maybe I would. My main anxiety is, will you still, even if we are plateauing, will they find a way to make it so that the first one isn't perfect?
Yeah, well, I mean, there's a total business reality. There's a whole term called planned obsolescence.
Yes.
Totally worth looking up. And that a lot of companies...
Light bulbs.
Yeah. A lot of companies don't want to give you something for life because there's no point. They won't be able to sell you anything else. Obviously, one of the biggest companies that went against that initially was Apple, and the Macs are known for that and whatever. But most products have a expiry date, even if they're not necessarily very well known. Once if you get to the one system to rule them all kind of thing, then does it become like films where like consoles are just like film chains, and everything is available everywhere, but then it's just personal preference as to where you go to play it?
You raised in a discussion we had a few months back about consoles being more like PCs and how you upgrade them optional upgradability, which I think is how they probably do it.
We did a podcast on that
quite
a while ago, and it's always that... The thing about consoles is there's the ease of access to them. Obviously, I know the whole, you have to install a game and download it. That's like past that point of like deciding to buy a console. Mm-hmm. The thing about that is it's then taking like companies actually making those upgradable parts not so much affordable, because they wouldn't be. Mm-hmm. Same as buying PC parts. Mm-hmm. I know this firsthand from literally 2 weeks ago. like it's just that side of it is, it, can people really be bothered? Like, I think if this became a new plateau, it would just be a case of half step systems every couple of years to be like, okay, here's this one with a bit of an upgrade to it. That's why you don't have a PC2. It's the same thing the whole way through, and if you don't have enough specs to play a game, you just get the new bits for it and you go from there. And I think that's about as best as close you'll get to consoles becoming PCs is you'll just get the, like, for example, if you bought you've got the PlayStation 5, or they call it the PlayStation, as we've theorized before.
With the 5 in the middle.
With the Play 5-tation.
You've seen Drive-Thru.
Drive-Thru-er.
Yeah.
And Fan4Stick as well.
It's always a good, always works.
Like, they'll say, you know, oh, if you got this, you know, this model, you've got the Play5-tation V2, for example.
It's like, super edition.
It still plays all the games from 2020 onwards, but if you're playing a 2023 God of War 6, you need to have the Play5-tation V3 or higher.
Yeah,
you
know,
kind of like how with Macs as an example, you need to have a late 2011 iMac or onwards to install the new iMac OS X software. I don't know because I don't keep up with Mac anymore.
Yeah, I don't even know.
Like
that.
I think that's kind of how it will go in terms of PCs. In terms of like hot swappable components, it's a lot of faff for the actual the companies producing these systems, but it's also a lot of faff for the customer. Like, you know, not to make a big generalization, but that's one of the things we'll get to about explaining about how they marketed it. They come up with all these teraflops bollocks all the time. Look at how many teraflops the Xbox One X has. People don't know what that is. It's just
I don't know what a teraflop is.
But the thing is like, when you're looking at like a part, it says, oh, this is your new graphics processor, you know, slot this in, this one actually has this many compared to this many, people still won't know. And that's when it just becomes more confusing. That's why people get scared off by PCs, because there's a lot going on. And yes, there is a lot going on, but you can't expect everyone to get their head around that. And that's why I understand the appeal of a console that just does it as it is. But
that's what I was gonna
half step will be happening with the next systems, but I don't think it's going to be like you've missed out unless you got the half step. They're going to have the half steps because things will slow down, things will improve, because PCs are just going to keep better and better. Like the power they're going to get behind them, and you know, consoles are always following in the footsteps. They're going to keep growing as PC does as well.
Yeah.
So it's going to be half step systems. My hypothesis is it's going to be half step systems from here on out, but it'll be the same system.
Right, because that's the thing I was going to say in terms of like the hype cycles around consoles, and the idea, oh, the consoles, the industry tends to respond more to the consoles. Like, a lot of the advertising is done through consoles. You very rarely see like as much effort put into like, oh my god, buy the next PC chip or whatever it is. So like, if you're chained to that sort of the way that the industry sort of rolls out, I don't think you bought consoles as much as we did, because you had the comfort of the PC.
I had a PC a lot when I was growing up. I still had consoles as well, but my main sort of output was PC. So I've never, you know, I've understood the generational gaps and the changes. Like I played on the PlayStation 2 a lot, and then I got myself an Xbox 360. I must have got it in 2010, I want to say. I got my 360 a bit late in. Mainly only because I got my friends were talking about Modern Warfare 2 at school. So I was like, cool, gonna get that. That was when I got my 360. And then I think the earliest I've got on a console to its launch date was I got a Switch in Christmas of 2017. Right. So eight, 9 months
in terms of
life
like
cycle. In terms of how close it was to launch. I've never been a day one for a console thing.
Because that's the thing, in terms of like a mentality going forward, it would be the PC mentality, where it's like, you don't even have to think about the next big thing. You already have the thing. It's just
that's,
that it might be able to run
that's
it
exactly where I am right now, because I literally just in the last week and a bit, I have upgraded my PC entirely.
Right.
And I've gone all out with it. And this thing's going to last me for quite a long time.
Nice. Do you have a question? In kind of servicing the little itty-bitty upgrades that we'll see with, or ostensibly see with these new console cycles, are we going to see more stupid bollocks like the Xbox £70 Elite Gamer controller that they unveiled at E3?
Yes, that's probably a really good controller. I've not played one. It's a
it could be the best controller in the world.
As in a V2 or just the
V1 It did not deserve 30 seconds of their presentation.
No,
and they didn't deserve to be hyped up that way.
£150 for a controller.
£150, yeah. And they completely completely masked the price point as well. Like, this is the only way you can use the controller. It's like, but what about your old controller? Oh, that's fine too. So why are you making it such a...
Again, it's kind of like
PC
that. I happily bought a keyboard like a couple of years ago for £130 a keyboard, and most people are like,
I'm judging,
why though?
You've got
lots of RGB lights, mate. It was awesome.
Issue of something.
But it's like there is that inherent quality, like with a new controller, it's like, yes, you get these extra bits and pieces, but for me, like, I know how, like, for example, like gaming keyboards are produced and like why they cost so much, and it is justified. Maybe not, maybe the profit margin is probably quite still quite steep.
Yeah, yeah.
But when I look at like the Xbox Elite controller, I just think 150 quid for that.
Honestly, yeah, it has to be able to clean itself. Like if it can get rid of the little gross stuff in between the little crevices of the controller, then it's worth the price point.
I mean,
but
if
you can't
do
that,
you can take the thumbsticks off the Elite to make it easier to use.
They need to make a controller that you just push a button and it just vents itself and blows all that stuff out.
I'm just thinking back to the future when he squeezes his shirt. Now drying, you're a controller.
Just give it up, put it in the corner and it just sort of vents and cleans itself.
That's the next evolution of gaming for me, is getting rid of the crud from your tech.
It'll be like a Wallace and Gromit arm that comes out of the controller with a big white glove on and goes, now wiping your Dorito-covered face.
I would happily take that thing. Yeah. That's a nice little segue to quickly talk about gimmicks. We talked about before the idea of like, you know, that difference between software and hardware and why you would invest in a console. So like I highlighted Nintendo. I'm going to go into some specifics in a bit, but mm-hmm. Nintendo, if you look up the history of Nintendo gimmicks, there are so many. From like Rob that came with the original NES, where you could get Power Glove, the Virtual Boy. Even with the GameCube, it was like, oh, you know, it's portable. It's got a handle.
I mean,
why would you have any handle?
That was wicked, man. Come on.
Was it wicked?
Yes, it was.
Anyone liked that thing?
My mate's GameCube stayed on his living room floor for this entire life, but god damn it had a handle.
it's wicked. You can pick it up and take it to the kitchen.
The one thing Nintendo did right, though, their gimmicks, bar, say, the Virtual Boy and the Wii U, their gimmicks sold. They were genuine things that actually worked.
Nine times out of ten,
especially in the noughties from generation 7 onwards, mm-hmm. it was basically Sony and Microsoft trying to catch up with Nintendo, hence why throughout the 7th gen we got so much motion controlled tat from Sony and Microsoft in that regard, that gimmick that Nintendo have managed to do so well. That's why like everyone was like, oh, the PlayStation 5 is going to be a Switch clone, as will the Xbox Scarlet, whatever. And you know, people are going, no, it's not going to be that anymore, mm-hmm. but like that's, you know, that was a thing. Nintendo's ones landed way more than they fell.
I think the ones I just mentioned I don't think did, and I think something like the motion controls, that was so stratospherically popular that obviously then you got the PlayStation Move and the Kinect, which didn't do very well. And even on the Wii, like other than some select first party stuff, there was hardly anything that supported motion controls that did it well.
Yeah.
And even on the Wii, they had to release the Wii Motion Plus to sort of get it working again. But that idea of gimmicks playing into hardware, is that something that ever got you guys excited over time, or is it nearly always the game?
I think HD was the first proper time I was like, okay, wow, you know, I love the PS2 bits, played it a lot, and then when I could finally have a HD TV and my Xbox 360, which had a HDMI
output. Tetris pieces in HK?
Yeah.
HD?
HD. Actually have Tetris for the 360, so try again.
I wish.
But like seeing that for the first time, I must have been in an airport lounge when I first saw a PS3 playing Gran Turismo. Was it 4? PS3? Seeing that in like what must be like 1080i or something.
I think that was
the first time I genuinely thought, good God,
I've
this
never
is
had to wear glasses, but I imagine the switch from like non-HD to getting that first hit. And you know, the really hilarious thing is, I got an Xbox 360. We didn't get a HDMI cable for like another year or two.
Playing through composite.
And then like I remember plugging the HDMI cable in, and I was just kind of like, I just wasted the last 2 years of my life.
Yeah, I think after we had the HD jump, that was the last, like things they could really sell on. Because Nintendo didn't actually start HD until the Wii U.
Yeah, true.
So they're quite happy doing their own thing. But like that was the first time I thought a gimmick could be sold to you properly. From there on, it was more like, you know, the 7th gen. After they got HD out of the way and everything became HD, motion controls, quick, let's try and jump on this. Mm-hmm. And obviously this gen, yes, it's graphics, like definitely, like it looks, games are the best they've ever done. That's next generation, actually. Like that's incredible, but that's when it's like, okay, now you're going to try and start pulling something out of your ass, hence why we then had 4K.
But then we can get on to, like, we're going to go do a whole rundown of some specific gimmicks and stuff, but I think, or like gimmicks that didn't necessarily work, but one of the things that I thought was so lush about the Switch was just like it obviously Nintendo have always been a toy company, but looking at the Switch and going, oh yeah, like I remember like really getting excited about functionality, not just the games themselves. Like I think that's how rare that idea of a system being sold on a gimmick is, and I think Nintendo with the Switch is one of the only examples that pulled it off in the last like 10 years or something.
I think I can trace back my apathy for console gimmicks back to when my dad got us the steering wheel and pedals for the old
shout.
And I remember being really, I was like, yes, I can actually drive.
I can drive now.
I can drive. And I was too small for my feet. My feet couldn't reach the pedals.
I had some of those,
my dad had to do it. And then when I was, and when my feet could reach the pedals, you'd push down and the thing would get further away from you. So you're driving around, no, come back, pedal.
I had that for the PS2. And I was trying to mount it on a coffee table. It just didn't
I remember just thinking at the time, I was like, this is just a big faff. I think console gimmicks. I had the VMU on the Dreamcast when I was young, and that was entertaining and enjoyable.
Light guns as well.
And light guns are great. I could love that. But like, literally everything afterwards, I was just like, just give me a controller, give me a nice crisp looking game, and I can live.
I think that's what some people's response to VR was as well. It certainly was for me, is like that initially anyway. It was like, until you're going to do this extremely well, I'm just going to look at it as another sort of gimmick that isn't like as refined enough yet or whatever. It needs to go hand in hand. Like, even though weirdly the Switch hasn't got anything that is as exemplary, is as demonstrative of the hardware as something like Wii Sports was to the Wii. Like the Switch tried to do 1-2 Switch, but it is the portability. It's, you know,
the thing though, they didn't really need to play up on much aside from that, just the idea that all the hardware did the talking, the software didn't necessarily need to back it up, at least not something to play into the actual the motion control, the removable controllers gimmick. They could have just said, hey, you go, here's Mario Kart split screen, bada boom, you got two controllers out of the box, job done.
I do think a delineation needs to be made as well with the Wii and Wii Sports and the Switch, because if you know Wii Sports was very much a casual kind of, you know, the Wii had mass appeal because it was marketed as the console that would get you fit and active and up and running, and it was wildly successful because of that, because you know, consoles were demonized for so long for being like, oh, you're lazy, you're gonna stay inside and do nothing
simulator.
And whereas when the Wii came along, it was like, video games can be your 5 a day now. And it was like basically the same thing.
See, so, we're always my 5 a day.
Yeah, so like when that came around, I think that was the reason why, was because it was very gimmicky, but maybe more mainstream audiences.
Well,
and maybe this, again, just before I move on, it's like maybe it's difficult to delineate between mainstream and hardcore audiences now because gaming is so prolific and prominent. And will a gimmick ever resonate in the same way ever again?
Maybe. I mean, well, that thing, like, that was the Wii Fit. That was the thing. But I. Grandma had the one because she just wanted to do the golf, so it was just that basic sort of the Wiimote there, that double pronged assault. But the Wii Fit was absolutely humongous. It was just the balance board, and like hardly any other games did anything with it. But I mean, that's one of the final points in terms of just where consoles are at now, before I start doing the rundown of all the gimmicks that didn't work, do you think we're at a bit of a glass ceiling with hardware? And we talked about the idea of just one single platform, but it's just that idea of where do they even necessarily go?
Stuff will keep getting better. It always will. All the hardware that you find inside consoles will just continue to improve and improve and improve and improve over time. It always will.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Before we go any further, I want to talk to you about today's sponsor, Masterclass. With the amount of time we spend discussing and analyzing video games on this channel, it's always good to understand exactly how these experiences are put together. And fortunately for me, I can do just that with Masterclass. With Masterclass's streaming service, you can learn from the best to become your best, studying and growing with over 200 plus of the world's leading instructors. For me, I've been having a blast using a class on video game design by The Sims creator Will Wright to find out exactly how game mechanics are designed around player psychology, as well as learning how important playtesting is to shipping the titles that you and I both love. But it hasn't stopped there, as I've also been brushing up on my practical filmmaking skills directly from my favourite movie director, Martin Scorsese, as well as trying to get back in the cooking game with Roy Choi's amazing course on intuitive cooking. Seriously, my kitchen is a mess, but my belly has never been more grateful. For just $10 a month, an annual membership with Masterclass gets you unlimited access to courses on your phone, computer, smart TV, or even via audio-only modes. Even better, every new membership comes with a 30-day money-back guarantee, and 88% of members feel that the service has made a positive impact on their lives. And to put the cherry on top of that cake, right now, What Culture Gaming listeners get an additional 15% off any annual membership at masterclass.com/gaming. That's 15% off at masterclass.com/gaming. What's that? You want it one more time? Well, that's the URL, masterclass.com/gaming. Right, now I'm going to watch Tony Hawk try to teach me how to ollie properly. I'll see you all soon.
Well, if it don't get any better...
Well, it will. Nvidia and AMD will find a way. They will find a way.
I think it's a subject. I think it's not even a case of like you can an objective measure of this game looks better than this anymore. I think it will go down to consumer subjectivity because I know there's a big push to, you know, DRM and like, you know, going always online and having your library be in the cloud and everything be online. Will we see people acclimatize that? Because I know so many people now who just buy digitally. I always prefer owning things, even though living in a flat now, I'm kind of like, maybe I'm running out of space. Maybe I would do better to switch to digital. I think maybe, you know, the battleground of ideas in the next generation will be more consumer oriented in the sense that it'll be about how we consume the media. Not necessarily what it looks like, but certainly how we kind of engage with consoles and gaming.
Yeah, I think we'll get to like the idea of like streaming and stuff, but totally. I think it's at some point there is only so much you can do with hardware. Like I said, that whole filmic comparison, it's like if the consoles are capable enough, there's only so realistic someone can look in terms of just base rendering power, and then it goes back to art styles to be more individual and things like that.
And the uncanny valley.
Yeah, which hopefully they won't.
Which I'm at with the remaster of L.A. Noire right now. The faces look great. It's the hair. The hair's just one texture in the remaster. It's really bad.
Lego piece.
Yeah. I think just quickly, the last thing about like going past the uncanny valley is then going into deepfake territory, and that's getting like people get very concerned about that. So if we get hyper super duper realistic, people then be like, nope, people can use this in bad ways. Let's not do this. So maybe that's where that ends up. Maybe that's where that enforced ceiling of like, don't go past this because then things could get dangerous.
Plus, if people haven't seen the talking Mona Lisa and the moving Mona Lisa, you should go watch that.
The Corridor Digital's Keanu stopping a Corridor Crew robbery.
Yeah. That's anything
very,
like that
it's very good, but like that's
also
where it
terrifying.
Could go.
So one of the things, because we had a big old meeting of the minds and we had some different gimmicks that we put together, and we can kind of rapid fire through these, but the first one is just 4K, the idea that 4K was going to be so necessary for the current generation that we're in. But the reality of it, I remember when Mark Cerny was standing at the PlayStation Experience and was saying like, look, this is the thing, we're going to play Spider-Man in 4K and look at the detail in the background, look at the detail on his mask and everything else. Doesn't make any difference to the game that you're playing, and Spidey on base PS4 looks phenomenal. So
I'm so glad that I'm hearing this, because I thought I was going insane. I legitimately thought that I was like one of the few people who just didn't care about the next stage of graphical advancements. I'm content with Blu-ray. I'm content with HD as it is. It doesn't need to be any more. And that's why I kind of just got switched off at Microsoft's presentation. They were marketing, you know, the Scarlet. It's just like, this is 4K. This is the best 8K, it'll ever be. Teraflops.
Rubbish.
This bada bing bada boom. I don't care. That's the thing. It's like I don't care. Mm-hmm. It's I'm fine with where we are visually, and I don't want to go. I don't care about going any further. Maybe I'm getting really cranky. You know, maybe the world's just passed me by, Scott and Rich.
It's all
I don't
right,
know.
Mate. It's all right. We'll get some nice shiny Avengers in.
I'm completely the same. I've been so happy with 1080p. Like I'm now considering moving to 1440p on PC, which is just it's known as 2K, 2560 by 1440. I'm thinking about moving to that resolution now because my PC's got a hell of a lot more juice in it. So I have the ability to play games at 120 FPS at 1440p. So I'm thinking, may as well.
Yeah.
But like, 4K with the console for me, because I haven't got a 4K enabled console. I didn't bother getting a PS4 Pro. I just wanted a PS4, so I got the cheapest one I could.
Yeah, of course.
And it's as I said, God of War, Spider-Man.
I was
going to
say God of War is a great
example. It's beautiful. Mm-hmm. It looks amazing. I don't need this in 4K. I don't have a 4K TV either. I don't need a new TV. Well, my TV's fine. But like the thing about 4K with consoles with me is the idea that they didn't necessarily mislead you. You were never lied to. But the way that they market 4K is they very much put it right on the surface, but they hide all of the fine print around the word 4K.
Right.
Because the amount of genuine 4K you get is very little, next to none.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where I have the problem. That's why the looking at next generation of that 8K, absolute bollocks, might I add. Ray tracing in the next lot of systems, also utter biggest utter bollocks.
Rich Hudson calls out Sony.
call out everyone.
Microsoft down.
The idea that, like, oh, we've got 900p up to 2K, we're going to scale this up to 4K and say it's 4K. Kind of, sort of, not really, no. Like, that's when I'm just like, okay, you know, you were kind of sold on the gimmick. Yes, it does look like 4K. Yes, it does look nice. Yes, it's nice and crispy. Mm. And the HDR can be really good as well. I will not dispute that whatsoever. But there are those moments when you just think, oh, you're talking so much
crap. The differentiation here is that the difference between native 4K and dynamic 4K, the difference between a game being rendered in 4K resolution and something being upscaled and being stretched to make that resolution. That's
basically, yeah. If it's something, there are a bunch of games on PS4 and Xbox that I have double-checked before this podcast that do run native 4K. Most of the time they are older games, or they are capped at a 30 FPS frame rate. The textures are brought down a bit because the kind of source behind that console can't actually cope doing native 4K, you know, those kind of textures. There are PCs that can't do that because it's still sort of up and coming, and that's why ray tracing on the next gen is even more ludicrous.
Right.
Because that is a whole new technology, and in a real-time position, ray tracing is very, very strenuous. To put it into perspective, this new build that I have got, my new PC.
He's got a new PC.
I didn't see it.
Oliver Instagram and Twitter. Whatever. The card itself, just the graphics processor itself, without any power supply, anything, that thing cost 3.5 times the amount of a PS4.
Mm.
That thing can just about do a ray traced game in full from 22 years ago.
Right.
That's how strenuous ray tracing is.
And also, just to outline, ray tracing is the new way that light is being processed.
Basically, it treats light exactly like light is in reality. It treats it as a ray of almost photons, and then surfaces will absorb light, reflect light, it'll glow, whatever, and then it will be calculated as time goes on.
So Does anybody need this?
It does look very nice. Okay. It looks absolutely stunning.
Have you seen Splinter Cell Chaos Theory? That's got really good light effect.
When he puts on the eye going.
I guess I saw my PC because it doesn't make that noise. It's really, really good. It looks amazing. You see Battlefield 5 running with RTX on. It's absolutely gorgeous. But it's like that idea running at a, you know, console manufacturers won't go any higher than $500. I know they have in the past. But that was stupid.
Yes.
That's about as high as they're going to get. Having something ray tracing 4K at that price point, you are pulling my penis, as it were. Not going to happen.
That is how it was.
Simply not going to happen.
I think it's weird because I like something like on Sony's case, like with the PS3, like again, it was like, oh, it's a 1080p system. But if you look up the amount of games that natively render in 1080p, it's hardly any. Even a lot of the main ones, Metal Gear Solid 4 didn't do it. Things like Wipeout HD, there was only a handful of games that actually managed to match what they were advertising. So it did kind of carry through with the PS4 as well with the idea of 4K. Also in Sony's case, for the next thing, do you guys remember the Emotion Engine? Those words mean anything to you, young Ewan?
No.
You were born when the PS2 came out.
Yeah.
It would have been like 3.
Was it 2000?
It was 2000. Yeah, 2000.
I was 5.
That's when the PS2 came out, 2000.
Yeah. 2000.
Well, I got an Xbox in 2001, 2,
yeah.
2.
Yeah,
two.
You were an Xbox child anyway.
I was, good. Yeah. Their whole thing back then to try and get the PS2 to be this big old deal was they said that we've got this, you know, because obviously following up the original PlayStation, big old deal. And they said, we've got this chip and it's called the Emotion Engine. It's going to, you know, it's going to stimulate you. It's going to bring all these different amazing.
Is this the same
effects.
One Saddam Hussein used?
Yes,
apparently, yeah. Stockpiling PS2s.
If you want to look up Saddam Hussein's supercomputer, then yes, feel free. But the PS2's Emotion Engine, there's some brilliant quotes from Ken Kutaragi from back in 2000. He was talking to Newsweek in 2000. I put this in, it was like biggest lies you've ever been told about a game or something. Because a quote from Ken Kutaragi, who back in 2000 was the head of Sony marketing back then. And he said, you can communicate to a new cyber city. This will be the ideal home server. Did you see that movie, The Matrix? Same interface, same concept. Starting from next year, you can jack into The Matrix. Not remotely true, that.
Just to make it really boring, the Emotion Engine is just the name for the CPU in the console.
Yep.
That's literally all it is.
But I remember being in school telling everybody about it.
But the thing is, like back then, they could, because that was the kind of graphical upgrade that was completely unheard of back in 2000. Like the jump between PS1 and PS2. Sometimes I see a PS2 game, and I think it's a PS3 game.
Yes.
And it's like, actually, this is PS2. It's like, yeah, Metal Gear Solid 2 is a great example. Mm-hmm. It looks amazing on the PS2. And yeah, they could play up on that because they genuinely were some incredible jumps.
There's still that massive distinction between like...
It's just a CPU.
Yeah.
I've got to give them credit for the amount of bull crap they managed to pull with that thing. It's fantastic.
Would the Emotion Engine have swayed a young Ewan?
I remember being swayed by the... when engines were first really kind of, to me, getting known was when... I use The Force Unleashed as an example when they were going about one. Havoc and Euphoria and all that sort of thing. And mm-hmm. then, you know, just, oh, they'll react to the environment. Ooh. And it always never seems to be as conducive as they imply.
Well, do you remember the demo they did for Force Unleashed? Because mm-hmm. LucasArts had the new Euphoria engine. And their whole thing was that it was everything was physics-based, very Havoc mm-hmm. physics. But every Stormtrooper would have its own AI. They all care about that they're there. They all have been realistically scripted and everything. And if you try and take away one of their TIE fighters, they'll hang on for dear life. And, you know, you don't know how they're going to react to everything that you do. And I don't know if you did the same thing as me.
You don't know how they'll react. They'll grab onto something.
One of their arms will stick to something and then they'll sort of flail around a bit. But I remember picking up a Stormtrooper in that game and dangling him next to something to see if he would grab onto stuff to see how they'd react. That was all they did. They occasionally stuck to something.
Yeah, and that's kind of why, you know, people have to kind of treat every single tidbit about this engine will do this. We're going to redefine how I always the phrase that always gets into my skin is we're going to redefine how you play games. Yeah, this is like a game you have never seen before.
Play your way.
And it's yeah, exactly. And it's just there's never that level of reactivity or it's never that organic. They can provide the illusion of something being naturally occurring and organic, but it's very rarely ever going to be as, you know, as intuitive as they think.
It's weird because we're all, like, everyone's obviously, like, you know, living, like, on this planet for the most part, especially in the West. We're au fair with overblown marketing statements and, like, we kind of just forgive it. And it's like, you with your overblown statements that got us in.
Yeah.
But, like, it is kind of ridiculous, especially statements like what Kutaragi's on.
At the best, it's cliched. At the worst, it's misleading.
Yes. Yeah. Which is, like,
They always manage to tread very, very lightly, but that's where it always annoys me. That's why I got annoyed about the 4K stuff. Mm. That's why I got annoyed about the ray tracing stuff. It's like, okay, this is really stretching the truth, isn't it?
Ooh. Just a wee bit. I've got down 3D on the 3DS, which technically worked, but you had to have the exact angle on the screen and the lighting conditions.
And you couldn't use it for more than 10 minutes unless your brain fell out your nose or something like that.
I just enjoyed Nintendo completely admitting defeat. Yeah, all right, we'll make a 2DS.
We'll make a 2DS. And I mean, I had a 3DS, or I have a 3DS, and I just turned it off because it's not a pleasant thing to look at.
The 2DS is so appealing. It's been so tempting to get one. I like just the to have one. Yeah, that's what I would get.
Remember,
like, I just don't care about the 3D side of it.
No. Remember 3D on Avatar the game, Ubisoft?
No.
Remember?
You could play Black Ops 1 on the 360
3D. Oh, yeah.
I have a 3D TV. I tried it. It is honestly the worst thing I've ever seen. But it was to think that the 360 could run it like the real 3D, I thought it was really cool.
That was such That was such a thing, too. Like, after Avatar, it was like, oh my God, 3D is the next big thing. And then, like I said, Killzone, either 2 or 3, whichever one released around that time, had 3D functionality, which just meant that the menu was a little bit lifted off the screen.
I say all the time, the only 3D film that matters is Spy Kids 3.
So.
I saw that film 3 times in the cinemas when I was young.
It used 3D to throw things in your face, and the real 3D is like, look, you can see depth in the screen. Cool.
What, where, I can't think of any 3D
where
film
are things?
That I liked.
Saw 3D maybe through stuff that I think it did, but like
Dr. Gordon in 3D. I like a bit of the old Gravity was really good.
Jaws 3D.
Literally the only thing I've seen in 3D in the cinema was Tron Legacy, which I absolutely love that film.
But it didn't need to be in 3D.
But they didn't need it in 3D. Yeah. And I saw the Doctor Who 50th anniversary in 3D because that had to be. That was only in 3D. So
you
I had to
watch
see
Doctor Who.
I don't like. No, I don't watch Doctor Who.
I didn't know you watched Doctor Who.
Have you seen his new PC?
It's got a new PC.
I'm being mean now. Next thing I got down is the. We talked about motion controls. We can get through these a little bit faster. But there was that arms race for motion controls after the Kinect.
Why even bother?
If we talk about Lair.
Yes.
And the stupid
gyroscopic controls.
Stupid. You can take your PlayStation controller and tilt it side by side.
They patched those controls out because everyone hated it. That killed like a potential PS3 exclusive because no one wanted a controller dragging.
And an amazing developer and an amazing studio as well. By the way, they were the guys who did Rogue Squadron.
Right.
So that's a shame.
It was a weird time. Lair kind of. I think Lair just. Does Lair predate the Wii?
They did Rogue Squadron afterwards, didn't they?
Right. PS3 released in 2007. Wii was 2006.
All those attempts at doing like getting you into the game, and you know, especially like I said on the Wii side of things. Mm-hmm. But I think the thing that hit the ground the hardest was the Xbox, was Microsoft's attempts, because neither of the Kinects worked, and they even took a lot
of time.
Remember Milo and Peter Molyneux?
Damn it, Molyneux.
The king of the gimmick, Mr. Molyneux.
The thing
Molyneux.
Is, like, when you boil the Kinect down, the tech inside the Kinect was absolutely unheard of. Like, people still use the Kinect now, the OG 360 Kinect. I still remember in Project Natal. That was such a much cooler name than Kinect.
Yes.
I thought. People use that because the way that the technology worked was really advanced.
Oh, yeah.
People used it for like scanning 3D models and doing stuff with computers for it instead of playing it for games. It's a fantastic piece of kit, but it's just like, who wants to play a game and go, right, you can control your character by doing this and swaying from side to side.
That was incredible that when LucasArts announced that Star Wars game, it's like, you could maybe the Kinect will justify its existence now. You know, I've always wanted to pretend to wield a lightsaber in a game, and it's just a matter of just going, And then also doing the dances as well.
If you're going to get a banter game for the Kinect, it was going to be Kinect Scar.
Yeah. I mean, especially when you said about the technology, the second one, like, according to Microsoft, could read your heart rate through the just by looking at the order.
I mean, A, which, I think that's rubbish, and B, I think that's really creepy.
It is very creepy. I think they proved that it could do that, but it was some way that it did it or whatever. But yeah,
oh, I see itself. You're enjoying this, are we?
Getting excited for these new products, are we? But like, yeah, it was weird. The technology, I don't think, was utilized very well, and obviously the way that it was marketed, it felt like they were always trying to catch up to Nintendo, which is obviously leading the field at the time.
PlayStation Move as well.
Yeah, and even with the Move, they then bundled it in with the PlayStation VR because they had so many Move controllers left over, and it's like, well, we can use this with the PSVR.
That's so expensive though as well. I'd love to buy into PSVR, but I want to play Until Dawn, Rush of Blood, but I don't want to pay £70 for a single bloody motion controller.
With a little ice cream ball at the end of it.
Yeah,
it's not a good look. One of the last two, I quickly had the Wii U, which I think it's something that Nintendo nailed with the Switch, but they tried to do the whole, you know, you're going to want to have two screens, you're going to want to try and play on the couch, and everyone just went,
it's
no, no.
It's the expectation people had with the screen controller was what the Switch was. Like, people wanted to be able to take it and just, like, piss off with it.
Yes.
Just jump in the car and off you go, but obviously that was what was missing. You were still tied down by an invisible wire.
Plus, I mean, we're talking about gimmicks. The Wii U gamepad itself was so loaded with everything. It looked like a drawing tablet that was also had the little triggers on, had, like, a little ridge on the back.
Because this was during the iPad revolution as well.
Yeah, and I think they thought we can do everything. We already have the momentum of the Wii. We can just roll it all in, and it'll all just kind of work. And everyone just kind of went, we're gimmicked out, to be honest. We don't need any more. The last one is one that you mentioned, Ewan, which is streaming. We can end on streaming and the future of playing anywhere.
That's the interesting thing, because I bought into the PlayStation 4 because I wanted the upgrade in graphics. I wanted to get the new games. It was mean about, I knew that this was the leap now. Yes. You're not going to be able to play new games if you're just going to stay on the old one. And I enjoyed the graphical advancements that were being made. Slowly but surely, I kind of really got warmed around to the streaming aspects of the PlayStation. I know you stream using different software because you're on PC and stuff.
Do you mean is it like streaming as to an audience, like to Twitch, to an audience, rather than like as I thought,
like you contacting a server
both,
and a game beam?
Both.
To you.
I think I've not tried the actual. I know there's PlayStation now. I've not tried. I desperately want that to be functional.
It used to be so laggy. According to Josh, it's better.
Yeah. If they can get that right, that's really interesting to me, and that is quite exciting. I tried using SharePlay for a little bit as well when that feature first got, and that was quite a fun way of being able to kind of play a game with your friends and show them what was going on and stuff. But it's never been used or deployed quite as, I want to say, as effectively as they wanted to. And but the idea of streaming, not only turning your console into a thing that can stream to people, which I think is that handy, because I used to do it occasionally. I used to just stream gameplay to people, and if they wanted to watch, they could watch. Not in like a massive way or anything, but then also being able to have an instant access to a library is interesting again. But then that goes back into the whole idea of, you know, how do we as consumers consume media, and is that going to be having a detrimental knock-on effect to the high street in different places at the same time? And there's definitely, you got to think about the ethical quandaries it raises at the same time, because just thinking about how, you know, we have high streets and how that kind of supports local businesses and all that sort of thing. You know, with GameSpot's on its arse, GameStop, not GameSpot, they're good friends. GameStop is on its arse.
Game
is on its arse. We don't have a game in Newcastle City Centre anymore.
No,
it's only in the Metro Centre.
We have a secondhand store called CEX.
Yes, and yeah, it's a concern, and I think that's going to be the big debate going forward. At least I would like it to be. I would like there to be some conversation about
it'll
it.
Definitely be a good
because people are just kind of dismissing these things as being like, oh well, guess we're just going.
I think they'll just go ahead with it in the next gen, kind of like the Kinect with the Xbox One. They just went, okay, here it is, here you go. And if it doesn't work, okay, never mind. We'll just not bother. At the end of the day, all of the streaming stuff always boils down to one thing, and that's your internet speed.
Yeah,
and you know. As you see from standard demographics, it's not going to be great for everyone.
I know,
so.
And it's like, going forward, obviously, Microsoft are doing their xCloud stuff. We have Google Stadia, which kind of got, Google Stadia very much got received as a bit of a joke, because you could see in the demonstration that it wasn't even being responsive, that there was a lag.
To be honest, the demo and the weird footage. One they showed off at E3 from Bethesda, what was it called again? Orion?
Oh, the thing that apparently handles packet data packets differently to get around.
It's because it's built into the game itself.
Something like
even
that.
Even that looked better than, Stadia, but I still don't care.
That's fascinating that they can even a computer can change the way it inputs the data to get around lag, so that your input method is always responsive.
Oh yeah, it's always based on where you plant that seed in the whole process, obviously.
Which could kind of potentially fix everything. And apparently the hands-on stuff from E3 with Microsoft Tech, according to the Giant Bomb report with Phil Spencer, where he sits down with Jeff Gerstmann and talks about it. They said that the server that they had was running from Florida, but they were sitting in LA, and it was completely lag free. So it's
that's
it seems
pretty
cool.
They're getting credit. There. I mean, I doubt they would be playing up on it if they didn't have it working.
Mm.
But again, it's just when you open it to a mass market outside of a relatively closed environment, that's when it really goes into
the misty shires of England. It's a completely different quandary.
Into the British countryside where you get a whole one byte per second.
Hook your modem up to your local sheep and connect via the local modem.
Send him running. But I mean, and plus, one of the reminders for me about the intrusiveness of online check-ins and online requirements is even that new re-released version of Doom from 1993. If you play that when I play that on PS4. Because the Bethesda, Bethesda have mandated it so that their online software, you have to be checked, you have to be logged in to play Doom. And if their online servers are having a bit of a hiccup, it'll just keep throwing a big disconnect thing in your face, which obviously we didn't have in 1993. So they retroactively made that game worse.
It's genuinely interesting to think that Doom, the original one, got shared around for free.
Yeah.
It's nuts.
It's really weird. But that idea, online functionality is online connections is in theory very streamlined and it should be the future. But if any hiccups happen on the base connection level, it's just going to throw everything out of whack.
Just everyone copy GOG. They're doing it right.
Yeah.
They're doing it right.
Okay.
DRM free. Best friends of CD Projekt.
Okay. Oh, yeah. That's their team.
That's their friends.
Well, let us know what you think down in the comments below if you're watching the video version of this anyway, or you can find us on social media if you're listening on any audio platforms. For now, though, this has been the What Culture Gaming Podcast. I've been your host.
I've been your host,
Scott Hilbert, and I've been joined.
Do host.
I'm Do host. I'm also Adam. What's that guy called? Max Haas?
Max Haas from Wolfenstein.
Max Haas, the host of the What Culture Gaming Podcast, John Mary Judson.
I have been his co-host, Rich. Thank you for listening.
And Ewan Parson.
I have no pun, but I have been Ewan, and goodbye.
And we'll catch you next time.
Bye.
Bye.
Max Haas.
Bye.
Max Haas.
Max Haas.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.